Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
From Hollywood, California, the horror capital of the world, the Boulay Brothers, Creatures of the Night.
Hello, darlings, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Boulay Brothers, Creatures of the Night. Drakmorta and I are here to entertain you and take you on this wild and dangerous ride through the realm of the fall and Halloween season.
It's here, isn't it?
It really, really is.
It's here and I can feel it. I'm excited. I think our visit to Knott's really got me in the mood and made me realize that Halloween is here.
So fully and so really. I'm so excited.
I feel like we work behind the scenes to create Halloween for so many months leading up to it. And everyone at home is like, when's Dracula coming out? When is the Halloween ball? What is the Halloween ball happening this year? Yeah, I just decided to stop it. But anyway, I did not. Of course it's coming. But, you know, everyone's asking these things and it's sort of like it's a timed release, right? It's a plan because we have so many things kicking off around Halloween that you have to give them a little bit at a time. Because if you give the children too much candy at once, they might die.
Of a stomachache. It'll be delicious and it'll be sweet and something you love, but you could die.
Exactly. Everything in moderation. So let's catch everybody up because a lot has happened since the last time we put out the podcast. And we are late, I believe, too, right?
Yeah, yes, we're late. We missed a week and you'll have to forgive us. And even if you don't, well, you have no power here. So we are
we'll
busy.
We'll do what we feel like. How about
exactly.
No.
Because it's not only spooky, it's also boofy season. Let's not forget.
No, never say that again.
No, it's coming up later. You'll see it in the listener questions.
I don't want to hear either one of those words. And ever since I said that, people keep saying it on social media.
Of course they have. I love it.
The minute you say something you don't like,
they take after me, Strack. They take after me because we love to torment you.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, so let's catch everybody up. So the big news is the Boulay Brothers Dracula Season 5 has been announced, and we have announced a release date. So, of course, it is coming out on Halloween night, October 31st. And I just want to tell everybody, remember, it's a streamer. What does that mean? That means it actually comes out on October 30th if you're on the West Coast. So it comes out at 9 p.m. on the West Coast. Why is that? Because networks operate on an East Coast timeline. So it comes out at midnight on October 31st. That means it's 12:01 October 31st. So if you stayed up on October 30th, it would be out at midnight. Just so everyone understands.
Yes.
So many people ask us, and I understand it's confusing, but at this point, how many shows come out on street? You don't sit down and watch
all the time.
TV.
And it isn't always consistent, not down to the minute, which is really annoying, but it's just a fact that we all have to deal with because some of our favorite shows are streaming. And when you want to see it right at midnight and it's not there, it's like, oh, I'm going to kill someone. But
exactly. So it has been announced that that's when the show's coming out. Everyone's excited. Press release came out and there were some little details in there. And I know that a lot of people don't like to read articles like that. They just like to look at the picture.
A lot of people can't read.
So I thought we should cover some of the basics that we talked about. The biggest thing to me that I want people to know is that we are taking the show to a back to basics sort of formula. And people said, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. And that means something different to everyone on the crew, I think. But to me, it's about leaning back into the competition aspect of the show. Because I felt like during Titans, and maybe it's because these people have so much history with each other, it started to become about stuff that wasn't on the show, right? Like, you hooked up with this person last year, and I've known you for 50 years, and 6 years ago we did this or that, and I just felt like, what does that have to do with, like, you're here to compete and make costumes and win $100,000, and that's sort of what I wanted it to come back to. And that's exactly what it is. Mm-hmm. We came right back to that formula. And also, drag artists doing crazy stuff, like crazy extreme Fear Factor type stuff. That's what Dracula is. We literally sat down and said, what is Dracula? it is this, it is this, it is this. And I'm like, well, then that's what it needs to be. And that message, I think, is reinforced throughout every episode.
I totally agree. And just kind of underline it with this, too. Just sort of like in addition to what Jack's saying, we really focus on the drag, too. Like the art form and what it means to be a drag artist. How do you get from stage one to stage done in like creating a look and a performance and a show and your stage presence and all of that. So we really sort of highlight and exalt the art form.
Yeah. And part of that, too, was us taking over as directors. So we have taken over as the directors of the Blay Brothers Dragula, along with Casey, who's been on the show forever. He directs a lot of the reality portions. But we've taken over as directors, which has allowed us to get our hands in the clay and reform it a little bit more into the vision that we want it to be. I feel like in the past we weren't able to do that because we didn't really have the time, because we're in drag on set all the time, to kind of step away and direct, because half the time we're getting in drag while that stuff's happening. But this year we were able to space it out to where we have days off out of drag that we can direct things, and then we get in drag and, you know, oversee everything.
AKA we decided to work, just doing a different job, on our days off. It was very satisfying, though, because
I loved it.
We're keeping our promise. What we promised was everything leading up to and including the Blay Brothers Dragula Titans was chapter one of Dragula. This is sort of like the first book. If there's like an encyclopedic collection of Dragula books, that is book one. And season five is absolutely the beginning and the cracking of the cover of chapter two.
It is. And a bunch of new crew members that joined, people that are very talented. Not a whole lot of people came over from the last chapter, I wouldn't say. So we brought a lot of new people on that added incredible elevation to the show, I think.
Oh,
and I think you see that from moment one. You'll see that in the Meet the Monsters trailer, I think, immediately.
New crew, new stage, who dis? There's so many new aspects to the show. It's the look, it's the pacing, it's the sets, the stage, the boudoir has been expanded, which is now called the lab. There's just a lot of things that are switching around and very exciting details.
Well, that's part of the thing, right? The lab. I'm like, why are they getting ready in a boudoir? I get it's a mansion, but I'm like, this is a monster drag show. We make monsters in the lab, mm-hmm. you know? And so I think that was a good rebranding. We're also not turning our back on the history of the show. I don't want people to think that, because we actually have a ton of former winners and competitors on the season. So we have Landon Siders returning for a couple episodes as a recurring judge, which I love. Victoria Black is on as a judge. Dali is on as a judge. We also have Coco Kane showing up for the first time as the official exorcister of Dragula. And maybe people might have missed that, but we crowned Coco Kane the exorcister of Dragula on the Blay Brothers Dragula Titans tour.
Mm-hmm. And I think season five will show us exactly what that means.
Right, exactly.
It's almost as though she's been weaved into the mythology of the Blay Mansion and the storyline, and she sort of like is our agent in a couple of things. And you'll see her in more than one episode. It's very exciting. I love Coco, and I love to feature her in that way.
I agree. And it's sort of like our answer for like a Miss Congeniality, I suppose, right? So moving on, we have announced that. So the Halloween Ball, a lot of people have asked us, are you doing the Los Angeles Halloween Ball? Of course we're doing the Los Angeles Halloween Ball. The only time we will not do the Los Angeles Halloween Ball is if we're dead. So, yes, we're doing. And even then, we'll probably continue to do it. I will lease the name out.
We may have a visit. We may have to visit even if we're dead. Yeah, exactly.
So, of course we're doing it. It is going to be on Saturday, October 28th. I don't want to spoil who's going to be there, but the lineup is insane. It's insane. That's all I have to say. We are moving it this year. This is something I want people to know. We are not doing it at the Globe. We are doing it at the Belasco, which is also in downtown Los Angeles. We are moving it because we can expand. One of my favorite things about the Halloween Ball is having different rooms, mm-hmm. different floors, and different areas. And the Belasco offers us the opportunity to have a lot more independent rooms where the sound isn't bleeding over and you could just create a different vibe.
I love that. And it's been so long, the days when I would go to like a huge mega club and just be able to get lost.
Right.
And we want to be able to offer that to our patrons and fans that come to the Los Angeles Halloween Ball. You can step inside of our weird world and it's completely decked out and you might not see everything. There's that much space to explore. And I think that's just so exciting.
There was people that got lost at the Globe. You know, they would go and they'd be like, well, I didn't see this, that, and the other. And I was like, did you leave the main floor? And they're like, no. And I'm like, well of course you didn't see it.
Yeah. Yeah. Explore, explore, explore.
So another interesting thing we're doing this year is we are adding to our Halloween activities, throwing our first ever Boulay Brothers Halloween house party in Seattle, Washington.
Ooh.
Yeah, and that's going to be on Sunday, October 29th, and I'm really looking forward to it.
So this is our answer to a different type of Halloween celebration in the city of Seattle for the very first time, and the lineup is killer. So what could you expect to experience at the Boulay Brothers Halloween house party? Of course, you can experience the Boulay Brothers and all of our grandeur, but we also have a collection of monsters that just... Oh my God, there's so many stars. Sigourney Beaver is going to be joining us. Victoria Black will be performing and doing shows. Dali will be doing shows. Abora is coming from Los Angeles. There may be some secret guests. We're going to have a costume contest.
Yeah, that's actually a thing I want to make sure people understand. We have a $500 grand prize costume contest. So costumes are definitely encouraged.
Yes, it's going to be super fun. And why Seattle? Because every time we've gone to Seattle, whether that be the season 3, the season 4, the Titans tour, it's just such an amazing drag loving city. Like, we have such energized fans there. We're like, let's do a party. When should we do it? Let's do it on Halloween weekend.
Mm-hmm. So I'm excited.
I'm very excited about it too. So tickets are going to be going on sale very soon. So please keep your eyes out at Boulay Brothers Dragula, all of our social media, BoulayBrothersDragula.com, and we will be releasing tickets and more details to come, not only about the Los Angeles Halloween Ball, but also about our Boulay Brothers Halloween house party.
Okay, so the next exciting thing we have to talk, there's a lot of things happening.
There really are.
I'm encouraging people to join us for Fear Fest on AMC because we are going to be hosting part of it. I'm very excited about this because in a lot of households, AMC's Fear Fest is a ritual. It's a Halloween ritual. You put on AMC and you just leave it on all Halloween.
Okay, they've started putting out the teasers today. Oh my God. It's just literally the best horror movies ever.
Yes, I'm so excited. I'm so excited to be hosting part of it and to be making appearances throughout it. I can't wait for you all to see it because it's a lot of fun. I love the movies that they chose too. When they first sent over the movie list and they're like, do you all want to do that? I'm like, absolutely. Like, these are some of my favorite horror movies. So obviously we're going to be talking a lot about Halloween and all the Halloween sequels. So I can't wait for that. So make sure you tune into that.
Just to expand on that, for those of you that don't know, so many of our friends say, oh my God, come October 1st, I put on AMC and it doesn't stop until November 1st. And what they do is monster marathons almost every night. I mean, they're like round the clock. You could always see some of the best horror movies all throughout the month of October on AMC.
And the next thing we have to talk about is the Not Scary Farms 50th anniversary.
Yay!
So recently, Not Scary Farms, they celebrated their 50th anniversary of Not Scary Farms, which is their horror activation during Halloween. And they had a black carpet event, so they invited celebrities and everyone to come, and we were sort of guests of honor at it, and we showed up. You probably know from looking at our social media, if you haven't seen it, we put a lot of pictures up there. A bunch of our friends went. Mm-hmm. We had an absolutely fantastic time, and I feel like Knott's is just at full power right now.
It's so good. I mean, literally a return to glory. I think we're officially with this year over any slumping that the pandemic may have caused. And in fact, I think even more people are coming out now.
Yes.
Because it's early in the season.
Everything's selling out.
Even Universal. I mean, everything is like really, really packed. But Knott's was like to the gills, full on. And Knott's is such a special place. And there's so many good ways to celebrate Halloween if you're living in Southern California. But Knott's is special because it is a 360 degree in the round experience. Like, you are always surrounded by music and performers and scare actors and people screaming as a roller coaster thunders by you and like a million haunted houses and carnival games. Like, it is so fun.
It was more activated this year than previous years, in my opinion. One of the things I remember before the pandemic was there were a lot of shows happening, kind of pop-up
yes.
shows would happen. And then there would be little tents and different things. And I felt like all that was back. So when we were walking around, I'm like, what's happening over there? And they had that sort of like slider thing happening.
Mm-hmm.
We walked up towards the front and they had the activation of the 1920s themed that they, you
so
know.
So cool.
Yeah. So fun. And just full on shows with bands and all sorts of things. And so I was very happy to be at the celebration. I was happy to sort of help them welcome that in.
One of my favorite moments was just sort of like, I guess it was like a mechanism of necessity, but we were getting escorted around the car. And there's like the Not Scary Farm that everyone experiences, but then there's like the secret behind the tent, right?
Which still feels
it's
very
so
Halloween.
Cool. Oh, no, absolutely. And we got to see a little bit of how they make all of the monster magic at Knott's. And there is a huge warehouse with like 50 makeup artists who transform over 1,000 monster scare actors a night.
We got to go backstage and meet everybody and see how everyone got painted and just where they were working. I fell in love. I felt so at home there. I was like, I would love to just be here all season.
And of course we were wearing our, like, you know, Empress of Darkness, like high collared dramatic ensembles. And we were like, how are we going to get around here? And they're like, oh, let's hop on this golf cart. So picture Drac and I on the back of a golf cart as they're zipping us around the guts of Not Scary Farm. It was incredible.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't die, so that was good. I did imagine the train on that dress is so long. I kept imagining it getting twisted up in the back wheel and then
pulling
you
right
off
under
to the ground and, you know, a little bit of road rash.
That's funny. I was picturing you getting pulled under.
I bet you were.
Yes, I was. But there was another thing that I thought was really special and cool. And really, it's the 50-year anniversary that brought it out, which is their Legacy Museum. And this was a huge, sprawling kind of time capsule about everything that Knott's has done and has brought to the community for 50 years. Mm-hmm. And my favorite part was celebrating the history of all the horror hosts that they had at Knott's, including Sinister Seymour, who I'm like, who's that? And it was just, you know, their very first one who at the inception of like Not Scary Farm, like, what is this? And they were literally just making it up as they went along. But legendary people came through there, like Wolfman Jack and, of course, ultimately Elvira.
Right.
And it was just really huge to see all of that under one roof.
Absolutely. And there's an interesting blank frame there at the end that I wonder who might be filling that in the future.
Yeah, it is. Someone's got to do it. Okay, so I think what we're going to do in a future episode, in a future upcoming episode, is invite the art director to be our guest because he escorted us through and was just a huge cornucopia of knowledge about Knott's and horror. And he does like all of the decorating and the street dressing and like curating the haunted houses. And it was just such a great treat to talk to him. So I think we're going to have him on and dedicate a whole episode to Not Scary Farm.
I think so too. One of the things we've done this year that I think is very interesting is we have met a lot of people that work in haunts and that put them on. And I don't know that I can recall a more dedicated group of people than the people that put these haunts on. You know, even in Jeff's case, he started going to Knott's when he was a kid, to Not Scary Farms when he was a kid, and then he eventually became a part of it. And there's so much history there that he knows about, and people like him put so much into it, and it's sort of underappreciated. And I find it so fascinating.
It's the passion.
Yes.
It's the passion for something, and that just keeps you going.
Yeah, we recently met some people in St. Louis that worked at The Darkness, which is a fantastic haunt.
Incredible. I mean, like,
mind blown.
Yeah.
And those guys have worked there, and I think they were 40-something now, since they were 16 years old.
Yeah. It really is a tight-knit community. It's because we're all like the mutants and the outcasts. And,
yeah.
But they're passionate about what they're passionate about, and it kind of joins us together.
I could easily see myself getting sucked in that world in a different path in life. I would love to just work in on a haunt at all times.
So fun. Yeah. Oh, my God. It's like running around Knott's. I felt like this is where I belong.
Absolutely.
I am like perfectly at home right here. You know, and speaking of haunts, and we're not going to give away too much more, but they have some new mazes, which is a very exciting update for Not Scary Farm. And one of them, our favorite maze now, is called Cinema Slasher.
Cinema Slasher is fantastic.
Excellent.
I love it.
It basically celebrated all the tropes of horror. And we're talking about everything from slasher movies in the shower, people getting hunted in a campground. I mean, it's literally everything you love about film. And you're literally walking through like movie screens and stuff. It was so cool.
So here's what, it's just so people at home know. So just to back way up, if you listen to the podcast, you probably know you've heard of Not Scary Farms. But if you are not in Los Angeles, which many of our listeners are not, Not Scary Farms is this huge horror activation that happens in Knott's Berry Farms theme park. And it's just incredible. But specifically, this maze is called Cinema Slasher. And you walk in and you're in like a movie theater and you literally walk up the middle of the movie theater aisle through this movie screen, and you're sort of walking into these movies. And so they have little areas that are, you know, sort of dedicated to each trope. Like one feels like Michael Myers, one feels like Halloween. And so there's this one we're walking through, and
Okay, there's water. It's like docks and piers. I'm like, it's fishermen. I'm like, is this Jaws? I'm like, what? I'm like, oh my God, I know what this is. I know what this is. And Drac's like, oh yeah, me too. It's I Don't Know What You Do Last Summer. Which is where the name of this episode was born.
So stupid.
It was so hilarious. I mean, Cinema Slasher, I think, was one of the last mazes we did. So our brain had been on like horror and haunts for like hours and hours. So
I don't know what you do last summer. I think we need to make that parody movie.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm going to pitch that to Shudder.
I love it. All right, listen, my darlings, we are going to take a quick break. And when we come back, it's time for our Junior Mints Movie Club review. All right, my darlings. The newest movie out in the Conjuring universe is Michael Chavez's The Nun 2, which is out now, still in theaters, and it will become available to stream on HBO Max on October 25th.
So before we get started, I do want to point out that Ian is not joining us today. I think he is out of town for a few days, and we said, too bad, we're recording this without you. So you'll see Ian on the next podcast. I thought we were really cute because we usually get our movie reviews out late. And this time, you know, if you people remember at the end of the last podcast, we said, you know, we have to go because we're literally going to the premiere, the Nun 2 premiere right now. Okay, great. So I was like, we are so ahead of schedule. This is going to be fierce. We're going to actually have a review out before anyone's seen the movie. Flop. Did not do it. Here we are. Everyone's probably seen it at this point, but that's good because at least people can sort of, you know what we're talking about when we're referencing it. So without further ado, here's our very late review of The Nun 2.
Okay, this movie was written by Akila Cooper, who also wrote Malignant, excellent horror from last year, and Megan, and all sorts of other films and TV, and also stars our friend, the legendary and iconic Bonnie Ahrens.
Can we talk about how Bonnie is
I think we need
a,
to.
She is a bona fide female horror icon now. Like,
absolutely.
The Nun absolutely is a figure like that because we don't have those sort of characters anymore. You know, I feel like in the 80s, we had the birth of, like, Michael Myers, Jason, Freddy, the Candyman, things like that. Mm-hmm. But you didn't for a long time. None of the ones after that really stuck, you know? Then
yeah,
now,
Ghostface, I think, was one that kind of
Ghostface,
became sort of
yes,
epic.
In the 90s. And yeah. Then and now I think Art the Clown from Terrifier sort of is having a chance to do that now. But so is The Nun, right?
Absolutely.
Regardless of the success or the popularity of the original Nun, the marketing and the branding stuck. So you know Bonnie Ahrens' face and you know The Nun, whether you know the movie or not. It seeps into that
it's
pop
iconic.
Culture.
That's what it is. It's iconic. And speaking of the face, Bonnie Ahrens' face. I mean, the way that the makeup is amazing, of course, but it's literally the structure of the woman's face that is so striking. And an evil, demonic kind of nun entity is, I think that strikes fear in people's souls.
Absolutely.
I mean, it is iconic.
That's one of the things I think this movie did well, was sort of using the image of the nun in these really artistic ways scare people. But we'll get into that.
Yeah. So let's break down the synopsis. So the story picks up 4 years after the events in The Nun, where we learn that Valak has escaped from Romania by possessing someone else and brought into, like, modern times years later. And when the church realizes that Valak is up to no good, they send returning hero Sister Irene and a new character, Sister Deborah, to stop the evil nun once more. And I think right after the film, now this is going back weeks, like Drac said, Drac and I looked at each other and we had like a big discourse because, hi, that's fun to do. Like, there's the movie party and then there's like the breakdown of the movie party. And what we agreed on was this. The movie was fun and it was cool, but it felt like two or three different movies. It felt like they couldn't make up their mind exactly what type of horror film that they were going to make.
Well, it's such a big, you know, production company making the movie. Like, I can see how that could happen, you know?
I think it takes someone that really has their hand on the helm to keep everything cohesive. Because
yeah.
I think for a while, like at the beginning of the movie, we were experiencing the supernatural horror movie that we thought we were buying tickets for.
Right.
I mean, it was cool. I want to talk about how the supernatural sort of like manifested throughout this movie because it was special, it was different, and it was really effective. It created an air of jumpiness because the entity, like this nun creature, would come out of the cracks on the walls or in the shadows, and they use this sort of like there, not there, sort of like fast cut trope, which, to use a very cliche term, it literally kept me on the edge of my seat because you know I'm jumpy.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh my God, the way that this is filmed is exhausting me because I never know when she's going to pop out, and I always get, you know, the jump scares just get me.
Well, interestingly, she doesn't pop out a lot, right? She doesn't really appear a ton in the film. I wanted to see more of the nun and the nun, you know? But the times that she did show up, the impact was very horrifying, I think. This is what I was mentioning a minute ago. The way that they showed her manifesting was through art a lot of times. And it was like the cover of the magazines or through the frame on the wall. And
yeah,
it was
even
just
the cracks on the walls of the Abbey.
Right.
Like, it was very abstracted.
Very abstract. But that's very interesting because, again, when you're talking about horror icons, they always have signature things, right? Like Michael Myers walks and he has this, there's always a certain vibe around him when he comes out. Same thing with Freddy. You know, there's smoke and you think of like steam and
pipes and
exactly.
Like the funny humor. Yeah.
All that. And same thing with Friday the 13th. You get that kind of feeling and that sound, you know. And I feel like The Nun 2 actually captured that and helped to establish, oh, this is how she sort of manifests in these scary ways. And I thought it was really effective.
Yeah, no, I'm going to agree. And we see a lot of other supernatural manifestations that I think are cool and like worth mentioning, specifically the apparition of the dead altar boy. Mm-hmm. Because this is someone's child who worked in the Abbey, sort of currently the setting of this movie. And this woman's child, her dead child, who was an altar boy, appears to her. And it's just, he looks so ghoulish.
Smashes her in the face of the bell.
it's shockingly brutal mixed with like this kind of like supernatural apparition vibe. And it was just really good.
So that was the first, you said this was like three movies to you. So that was the first movie. What was the second movie?
Well, okay. So part of the premise is they are searching for this biblical relic, the eyes of St. Lucy. And it's revealed that it's hidden somewhere in the Abbey. And there's like, have to figure out how to find the location because Valak is after the eyes of St. Lucy. And if she finds it, she'll have like unleashed unimaginable power. She'll basically be unstoppable. So they go on this crusade to find the eyes. And there's like this whole trick in this stained glass window that sort of reveals the location. And the stained glass depicts a black goat. And there's some other ephemera around it, but the central figure is a black goat. And after the trick of the stained glass gets figured out and it reveals the location, they're like, oh, so we know where it is. And they're digging for it. The goat disappears from the glass and manifests as a huge goat hybrid man. I couldn't believe what I was looking at. I just couldn't believe that they were going there. And the movie turns into a monster movie as this goat creature hunts them down through the Abbey.
Right. And it felt disconnected from the rest of the movie. I thought it was interesting sort of conjuring something else and having that, you know, attack them. But I don't know. It was sort of a disconnect for me.
Yeah, I think that was the jarring part. And that's why it felt like, oh, this is almost like a second movie.
Right.
This is like someone else's idea. And I do think it was cool. It expands on the sort of demonology of the Conjuring universe. Like maybe we'll get a backstory or a prequel about this character. Like how did this go end up in the glass? Like, you know.
Oh yeah, that's interesting. I mean, yeah. I do think it would have been more effective had it actually killed some of the students, you know? Like, because
yeah.
I felt like it looked like it was going to, you know, it kind of stabbed. One of the coolest scenes I thought is when the goat creature stabs its horn through the door that they're trying to hold the door and barricade it. And it stabs its horn through into the girl. And
just
I was like, oh, she's dead.
Her,
and then she walks off. She's like, oh, like it was a scratch. I was like, you were just impaled. I'm pretty sure you'd be dead.
They got that wrong because that goat was like breaking down doors and stomping. Like it was humongous.
Right.
Throwing them around like rag dolls. And that Sister Irene must be cut from some other kind of cloth because she was just getting up and brushing it off like, oh, no problem.
Yeah,
next.
That was one
it's
of the
weird.
Things I thought when she got punched.
Yeah,
into
it was
the I was like, I guess she's like, maybe she's secretly a mutant or something with powers. Because like, I don't think you could get punched into a window across the room and you just get up.
Yeah,
but, you know.
Yeah. But I do want to say the imagery and the theme of the goat is so great. It conjures up classic ideas about witchcraft, Black Phillip from The Witch, Baphomet, just very cool.
So then what was the third? You said there was three, so that was two. So what was the third?
So finally, the nun sort of descends and evolves into this kind of like swashbuckling, what I like to call spooky Indiana Jones / Goonies adventure.
Right.
Where it's like, we got to get the relic and dig out the thing and dodge the monster and battle the nun. And it almost became like an action adventure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, with like a supernatural backdrop.
Yeah, which I don't think was super thought out because they find the eyes, but the nun gets the eyes, which should have meant that then the nun would be so powerful that they couldn't be stopped, but they were still stopped.
Yeah.
So it was a little confusing.
In
honestly.
Kind of an abrupt way, too.
Yeah.
Like it was not.
With
wine
barrels.
Oh, my God.
No, I mean, that's what it was. Like, I mean, it kind of makes sense when you think about, you know, the wine being like the blood of Christ. And so you would use, you know, maybe sanctify that, and then that becomes a weapon against, I don't know, but
it was giving video game. It was giving end boss trick of the scene, like what you had to do. You had to run around and uncork all the wine bottles.
It was definitely like, yeah, you had like,
yeah,
you know, a 10-minute timer that you had to sort of like, you had the opportunity to do the yeah. the wine bottles. Then you had to get back in your group and sort of like dodge attacks for like 20 minutes until you yes. got that 10-minute window again.
You had to kite the add-ons.
Exactly.
Pop the wine bottles. The priest had to sanctify
yes.
the wine
yes.
before the nun enraged after 10 minutes.
Oh my God. Exactly. That's what it felt like. So I guess overall, I preferred, if this was three films, as you said, the first film. That's the one that I liked.
Which was my favorite. It just descends in order of appearance for me. I loved the first film, the supernatural horror movie, kind of exalting this nun character as a new female icon. I love it. I did kind of appreciate the monster aspect of the devil and the goat because, let's talk about the devil. I love the devil, but I love monster movies. So that was kind of satisfying. It just kind of brought me out of the nun world, which I thought was a little weird.
Yeah. Did you like this movie?
I definitely did. I think it's a good addition to the Conjuring universe. I'm happy I saw it. And there were theatrics at the premiere that were so cool. They ended up on some of our social media. So if you want, go back and check that out because they had these black-faced nuns come out with candles and it was just so cool. But yeah, I thought it was definitely worth watching. Was it a perfect film? No. But did it have cool elements and really interesting uses of the way the supernatural manifests in this world? Absolutely.
I would love to see a recut of this movie because I think there was parts of it that were really scary. But I think we could tighten up some of the sort of adventure parts of it and sort of get rid of that and up the horror, right? Like up the kill count, up the grisly, you know, because the way they marketed it was very scary.
Yeah.
It actually was scary. There were a lot of really scary moments in it, but I would have liked to see a little more death and destruction from the nun. I also don't like how they dealt with her at the end. I wasn't a fan of that either, but overall, I had a great time going to see it. I liked it, and I think people should definitely watch it. But we're curious about what you all think, too, so make sure when we post about the podcast that you comment on social media and let us know if you agree with our review of The Nun or what your thoughts were on it, and we will continue the discussion.
And on that note, we're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we will be reaching into our listener mailbag for your listener questions. Don't move.
All right, welcome back, Uglies. It's time to dig into our listener mail. So, Swan, the job is yours.
Haley from Connecticut writes, "Hi, ghouls. After the last episode, when we got to hear about Drac's hatred for the word spooky and hearing the discourse regarding spooky season, I would love to see a TikTok segment or several of you guys going to your local home goods type stores to review the silly, spooky, goofy, boofy decorations and trinkets. Would you ever do one?"
Yes, I would, and I will.
We
I'm
almost
do
have
it.
Already.
Yeah,
yeah.
I almost have, and I'm definitely going to do it, and I will post it on TikTok.
Do you appreciate the usage of the word boofy?
I made it up. You have coined
that word.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it is. You know what I mean? It's very like boo with like, you know, a goofy font.
Oh, so it's a boo and goofy.
I don't know. I guess. Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, you see that stuff. It's like you see cool Halloween stuff. And yeah. I don't mean cool as an edgy because I love classic retro Halloween. So it doesn't have to be like highbrow or any. It's just there's this weird Martha like boo, like googly eye ghost. I hate it so bad. And I'm going to go to Home Goods and I'll point it out. I'll show
it's
people
so
what
fun.
I mean.
Okay, our next question comes from a self-proclaimed spooky, boofy med student.
Are you serious? Two people? Wow,
yes.
Okay.
Hello, Drac and Swan. I'm a fourth-year medical student, and I love the most recent episodes discussing the brain worms. Drac, you mentioned how do these parasites get to the brain, and the simple answer is many of them will pierce the intestinal wall and then migrate to other organs like the lungs and the brain tissue. Fun fact. Some theorize that the rod of Asclepius, the little rod with the snakes wrapped around it, which is associated with healthcare, has its origins in the treatment of a certain worm that pierces the foot and resides in the leg. The worm creates an ulcer in the leg, at which point the worm is accessed and slowly extracted by wrapping it around a stick and slowly winding it up to pull the worm out. And some of them can be up to 3 feet in length. But anyways, enough of the med school lesson. My question for you is this. When in your life have you been the sickest? I'm talking fever, chills, I think I'm dying type of sick, not serving sick looks, which we're also guilty of.
Wait. Okay, but you never explained why it went to the brain. Like, I'm glad that he wrote in and told us all this, but, like, he did not say why. Like, that's my question. I understand it could go to the lungs or brain, but for what? Like, why would it go there is what I want to know.
Because they're the most delicious parts.
Oh, my God.
Everybody knows the organs are the most delicious.
Wouldn't it? I would think your liver. Well, anyways, okay, so why he wants to know why were we sick? Who the hell wants to know that?
Listen, the sickest we've ever been in our life. This is a medical student. Hi, he just went off on worms in your leg and the rod of Asclepius. Like,
oh God.
I'm going to say when I was a very small child, and this is like part of like my personal legend, I used to get massive fevers as an infant, and they would give me, it would be fevers to the point where I'm like ran the risk of doing damage, like permanent damage. So they would give me like ice baths, which I guess lasted for a year or two before I was able to break it. And they don't know how or why. Just strange.
Interesting. I'm trying to think. The time I was the most sick. I will say this. I used to get tonsillitis really bad when I was a smoker. And it would happen.
Bronchitis.
At least, yeah, bronchitis and tonsillitis and all this stuff at least maybe twice a year. And it was bad, 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 bad. But as soon as I stopped smoking, and I haven't smoked for at least 10, 15 years, you know, probably longer, right?
It's probably been longer than that. But just to reiterate that, you would literally get sick every year, at least once a year. And not just like sick. Like, you would be in bed for days. You could barely talk. Your throat was inflamed.
Yeah,
you were coughing.
Like,
you were fever. You were miserable. And that would happen one or two times a year.
Yeah. Once I quit smoking, never happened again. Very interesting. Because that, I mean, that shows you how, I mean, smoking is so horrible for you. I don't know why anybody would do it, honestly.
While we're on the subject of this crazy, like, weird story that we heard about the brain worms, I have another one. It's an update from the Boulay Brothers' Books of Body Horror, which I just coined, and maybe we'll do something with. But I had another recent read, which I thought was so weird. The story was about a 28-year-old Russian man who basically was reporting chest pains. He was coughing up blood. The doctors were giving like chest exams, and they basically said, there is a tumor in your lungs and it needs to be removed. And this is what's causing all of the, you know, the bleeding and all of the pain. So during the surgery, what they found in his lung was a 5 centimeter long fir tree growing into his lung tissue.
A tree?
A tree.
How does a tree grow? And I don't understand.
Okay. It's all just like what they think may have happened, which is they believed he inhaled a seed and it got into his lungs and it actually grew there. And it was little, but the prickles, and you know, like fir is like a pine and it.
What does it, did they take it out?
Yeah, it was extracted. Absolutely. Yes.
And he's okay.
Yep.
That's disgusting. It makes me want to vomit. I mean, that's just, I don't know. That's really gross. I'm not into that. Let's move on.
Okay.
That's a horror movie to me, you know? I don't know why. I'm not into it. Okay, sorry, go ahead.
No problem. And our last question from Charles in D.C. Hilarious episode. Which Dragula performer would make the most creative tapeworm? Hoso?
The most creative? Like, what? Like, who could make the most creative tapeworm look? I'm going to say it's someone from season 5 that you all haven't met yet.
Wow.
Would be the queen tapeworm. I am sure of it.
See, I wasn't even thinking that. I'm thinking, of course, Hosa's a great nominee for this because of that hagfish.
Yeah.
My mind immediately went to Moniki just because of the face
mask.
You think
Moniki could make a great tapeworm
outfit? I think Moniki looks like a tapeworm already.
Okay.
But you know what, Drac? I wasn't even thinking about season 5 monsters, and you are 100%
correct. The worm is coming.
Number one.
Yeah,
ding, ding, ding.
For sure. Yeah. All right, everyone. Well, that is it for this episode of the Boulay Brothers Creatures of the Night. Thank you so much for joining us, as always. Remember to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get podcasts. And don't forget to visit our merch shop. Make sure you go to theboulaybrothersdragula.com and buy some Creatures of the Night merch. If you really love the podcast, then you should go and prove it. Anyways, we will see you on the next episode. Bye, uglies.
The Boulay Brothers Creatures of the Night is hosted by the Boulay Brothers with their co-host and producer, Ian DeVogler. Engineered and mixed by Carlos Bueno, with music by Neuron Spectre.